gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Happy Friday, everybody. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12. The phone number toll-free from anywhere. What a show. Tina Dupuy coming up at the bottom of the hour. Jim just arriving, so he can't make the creepy sound. I'll make it for him. This show consists of my our boy and girl writer crushes. Tina Dupuy coming up.
Yep.
And that's the creepy Jim Ward. He's here. Okay, Representative Adam Schiff of the great state of California. And then sexy liberal John Fugelsang in hour number three. Big sexy liberal announcement coming up soon, by the way.
What? You don't say.
And he is, of course, as you know, my personal comedy Jesus.
He is.
In the ecclesiastical moop.
Moop.
Maybe he's a moop.
Let's ask him in hour three.
I cannot wait to talk popey with him. How about that pope?
He's impressing me.
Yeah.
Let's see, where's the headline here? Well, among others, Pope Francis, Catholic Church must focus beyond small-minded rules. Pontiff says church has to find new balance, otherwise even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards.
Mm-hmm.
They have to stop talking so much about the gays and the abortion. LOL GOP tweets, the Pope is just begging for a Tea Party primary challenger. That's funny. Frank Rich tweeted, speaking of boy writer crushes.
That's right.
He tweeted, who would have imagined the U.S. would have a major political party to the right of a pope?
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, New York Times headline, Pope bluntly faults church's focus on gays and abortion. Frank, Pope Frank, how much do we love him? I love the way he's poping myself.
Has he taken my advice and started wearing Chuck Taylors instead of the red shoes?
No.
No, okay.
No.
That would be the ing awesomest. That would be it.
Yeah.
That would be the... Right?
Yes.
Because then we'll know, first of all, he's listening to the show.
If Stephen Colbert were the Pope, then he would have done that by now.
I have a feeling he is sitting in the Vatican going, what can I do next? Some right-wingers off.
He's also,
I know, Chuck Taylors.
Yeah. He's also asking bishops and priests to live a lot more simply than they do.
Wow.
Wow.
Kind of like Jesus.
Exactly.
Can the Pope be president next? What
please?
About that?
Yeah.
Maybe they can sell off some of the artwork. You know,
Pope Frank for U.S. president. Yes.
Actually,
sorry, Hillary.
There is a
help
reason why they have all of that artwork, though, so that
true.
They can...
I know Hillary's listening, and she's, it's my turn! Okay. Pope Francis said the Roman Catholic Church has grown obsessed with preaching about abortion, gay marriage, and contraception, and that he has chosen not to speak on those issues despite recriminations from some critics. In remarkably blunt language, Francis sought to set a new tone for the church, saying it would be a home for all. What the?
Then he did a mic drop.
What the? Gangsta mic drop.
Yeah.
And then he split.
Popey mic drop.
Right. He said it's not necessary to talk about these issues all the time. Dondelos.
Wow.
Yikes. We have to find a new balance. The Pope continued. Otherwise.
Who are you and what have you done with the Pope?
Where's the Pope? Otherwise, even this is turning into one of those like, what's that creepy? They're all creepy Vatican movies. But which one am I thinking of? I don't know. Okay.
Oh, was it the one with Tom Hanks?
Oh,
the Da Vinci Code.
Yes! A Godfather? I don't know. They're all creepy, and they all involve the Vatican.
Oh,
okay.
There's going to be an albino showing up to flog himself.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find a new balance, he said. Otherwise, even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards, losing the freshness and fragrance of the gospel. He is questioning the gospel's freshness. That is awesome!
I think you're thinking of the third Godfather movie.
Would have been considered a sacrilege, questioning the freshness of the...
I think it was the...
Somebody get the church some Massengill.
Stop it!
What?
The gospel needs some...
No, incense. That's all they need.
Oh, incense! Oh, see where
and
I
peppermint.
Went.
Oh, boy. Send your hate mail to Chris Lavoie, noted atheist of the Stephanie Miller Show. All right. He went on to say, a person once asked me in a provocative manner if I approved of homosexuality. Oh, in a provocative manner. Like that? Like, that'd be weird if you said that like that to the Pope, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Barbarian.
I think he meant in an argumentative manner. He didn't mean provocative like that.
Like to provoke a reaction kind of thing.
What do you think about the lesbians? I don't think like that.
No. That's not what he... No.
I replied with another question. Tell me, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person with love or reject and condemn this person? We must always consider the person.
Oh my God.
Exactly who are you and what have you done with the Pope? Wow, I wonder if the Pope has any thoughts about cutting $40 billion in food stamps.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really? What did Jesus talk
Jesus
about
starve?
Most? Right. Help. I mean, this is just beyond the beyonda. Our friend Julie in Seattle had some great tweets. Speaker Boner, ever wonder which ring of hell is reserved for powerful men who work to snatch food from hungry kids' mouths? You should. She also tweeted, with deficits plunging, hard to see how GOP votes on food stamps are motivated by anything other than just mean-spirited hatred of the poor. Yeah, I mean, this is like, it's Antichrist. It really is.
Yeah.
I was like, really? House passes bill cutting $40 billion from food stamps. House Republicans narrowly pushed through a bill Thursday that slashes billions of dollars from the food stamp program over the objections of Democrats and a veto threat from President Obama. The vote set up what promised to be a contentious fight with the Senate. Eric Cantor. Oh, did he dip in from Montauk to explain?
Yes, he did.
Well, I'm hoping to be on Montauk.
The reforms made by this bill will put people on the path to self-sufficiency and independence.
Yeah, we'll starve them into independence.
Oh, he is such a smarmy bastard.
And then he went to go have another Singapore sling.
Oh, boy. I think
did I say Singapore sling? I meant a Boilermaker. Grr.
These people are, they are just dreadful.
I mean,
really. We will, by the way, our friend Tina Dupuy, of course, wrote a great piece about this, but how many times can we say these are children, they are disabled, they are working poor,
yes.
They are people with jobs, there's not, like, lazy slackers. Anyway, we will talk to her about this in just a few minutes.
Go out and inherit $1 billion. What's
elderly.
Wrong with you?
Like, really? Anyway, all right. So, you know, sometimes, Jim, we say something here by way of comedy, by way of ridiculous hyperbole, over the top.
It actually happens.
What? Limbaugh comes out against drinking water.
Yes. Yes.
I am not kidding. Remember I said this? I said when Michelle Obama said, hey, you know, it'd be a good idea if kids would drink more water, would hydrate. And I was like, I think this was a test to see if Republicans
would
are going against water.
That's communism.
I think she is with them at this point. I think literally if kids should go outside and play, they'll come out against air. They should be. You should get more sunshine. They'll be against the. This just in: GOP against the sun. GOP votes to ban the sun. Yes. First Lady Michelle Obama is teaming up with Partnership for a Healthier America to encourage people to drink more water.
We've decided to ban the sun and starve the solar industry.
Who
better
to
them.
Get health tips from than Mrs. Obama apparently feels that one-fourth of American children drink no water at all is a problem that deserves some attention.
Yeah.
Limbaugh quite predictably saw this as another example of an out-of-control Marxist government meddling in the citizens' personal lives. This is what he said. This is a direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
This is really absurd. Drink more water. It's none of their business. Why do they care? You drink when you're thirsty.
That's the authoritarian mindset. They look at everything as a command,
you can't
not a
make
suggestion.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you going to wash your OxyContin down with, you load of
bourbon,
water?
Like I always do. Oops, I shouldn't have said that, my friends.
Taking it a step further, oh, dear God. He suggested the Drink Up initiative is actually a scheme to funnel money for bottled water into the pockets of Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Although he said those companies were victims of a government assault on soft drinks.
What?
So I think all his conspiracies are kind of mashing together there. He said, and I quote,
now we know that Bloomberg doesn't want people to drink sweet and soft drinks, limiting the size of 16 ounces. I'll tell you what I think it is. I think there's an all-out assault on soda pop soft drinks. That's why, by the way, if you've noticed, all the soft drink companies now have their own version of bottled water, Coca-Cola, and their own version of bottled water. I'm sure Pepsi does. Okay, so, see, that's a... I'm not really...
See, it's a conspiracy to get people to drink Pepsi water. Huh?
Right. Let's see. I love this. I don't even know who wrote this piece about it, but they said at this point, Mrs. Obama could start a smoke cigars and drink OxyContin / mayonnaise smoothies initiative, and Limbaugh would object. Ay vey, schmear.
Oh, boy. Cigar and mayonnaise smoothie.
All right. So we obviously have been talking guns again this week, which has brought the, sort of gun nuts out on my phone lines and elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this.
We be talking British now. You do that gun back. Arm bears fringe.
Not suggesting that Darwin is involved here, but two concealed carry permit holders shoot and kill each other in Michigan.
Fantastic. Progress.
Story out of Michigan. Two gun owners got involved in a case of road rage and ended up shooting and killing each other.
Fantastic.
Two drivers are dead after a road rage incident escalated into a shootout. One driver was following the other driver too closely. First driver pulled into a car wash parking lot, and the other driver followed him into the parking lot. Witnesses say the driver of the following car fired shots. The first driver returned fire. Both drivers were shot and killed. Authorities say both men had licenses to carry concealed weapons.
Evolution. That's what that is. Survival of the...
Lord. Lord, Lord. Yep, that brought out all the nut jobs on the phone lines this week, the latest gun massacre, and we salute them.
Background check means universal registration. Universal registration means universal confiscation, universal extermination.
We don't agree with what you're doing. Coming to Texas to, quite frankly, piss on us.
I've been listening.
Hitler took the guns.
To what comes out of you.
Mao took the guns.
I'm assuming.
Stalin took the guns.
That you have a screw loose.
So we're exploring red coat treason.
Lieutenant Earth ain't making it through to your head.
Get your kids away from the school that is indoctrinating them that socialism is okay.
You've been battling.
Find a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people.
Globalist collaborator scum you are!
Control.
Taking everybody's guns.
You are insane, and we'll find you your own padded room.
Well, we know you want our guns. We're going to defeat you.
And in case you have forgot, what a nut job! Don't you think you might just have a screw?
We're showing everybody!
What a nut job! Your mind has slipped away.
They're coming to take me away, huh?
You're the one who won't do anything about the mental ill.
The Barack Obama gang actually is attempting to re-implement the tyranny of King George. And if you want another Concord Bridge, I got some buddies.
Oh. Oh.
Thank you, Rocky Mountain Mike.
The tyranny of King George?
In there? That's like that, see? That was the guy with the caller from yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait. Redcoats!
You gun us out your way, we'd be speaking British.
We kind of speak English.
Anyway. We're still speaking British.
Wow.
Okay.
Talk American.
Once
not
again,
British.
I'm winded by my own first segment.
Yeah.
All right, 19 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It's a little too hot. I burned my mouth.
It is. Blow on it first. Blow. 23 minutes.
Put
what?
Your lips together.
What?
Whatever.
And blow. 23 minutes after the hour. He's just getting warmed up for Tina Dupuy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
She's not in studio this time,
oh,
Jim.
Oh, damn it.
I'm a stunt victim.
Yeah.
There's a future perving. All right, 1-800.
I'm sure I had a shot this time.
Yes. 1-800-STEP-12. Hey, Friday stack, everybody.
It's, yay!
It's drunk stack. Where's my... there it is. Drunk stack. Friday stack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I'm having a bad...
life?
Right.
Wow.
This could be a future husband. David says there is a Texas man can get drunk without alcohol due to auto brewery syndrome.
I heard about this, yeah.
Can you brew beer in your own stomach?
Apparently you can.
Ew.
If there's a wine version, think of all the money Steph could save. Oh, can you imagine if I could make my stomach into a winery?
There's a winery in my pants.
Right. That is awesome.
Is that a wine barrel in your pants? You're just happy to see me.
It's extra oaky.
Oh.
Hey, speaking of
beer.
This I have to say, this is a good prank. Guy's prank buddy by replacing all the tap water in his house with beer.
That is the awesome.
In New Zealand.
A group of guys in New Zealand, right, with a very particular set of skills, decided to put those skills to good use by plumbing their mate's house with beer and then recording his reaction using an elaborate series of hidden cameras.
What was his
Come
reaction?
On. Well, I don't know. Doesn't say.
Oh.
I'm happy, I'm guessing. I mean...
Oh, what is the malt liquor? What gets you drunk or quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer!
Can't get enough of it.
Beer!
How we really love it.
Beer!
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer!
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer!
But I'd rather chug it.
Beer!
Got my belly out to here.
Beer!
I could not refuse it.
Beer!
I could really use a beer.
Beer! Beer!
Yay! All right. My birthday's coming up next weekend. There better be Chardonnay coming out of those taps in my house, people. Or you're all...
You're fired.
Travis! Call the plumber! All right. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm one of those guys that works about 70 hours a week, so I don't qualify for food share. But I'm really disappointed because I heard a woman on MSNBC state that it's well documented that people on food share eat lobster. And I'm just wondering if that is called poor man's lobster, or I haven't had lobster in so long.
Wow. People on food stamps eat lobster. Really?
That's the talking point?
Said.
It was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I, the guy next to her was shaking on the split screen, was shaking his head. And I just, and she said it with a smile on her face. These people disgust me.
Yeah.
And someday we'll be eating lobster and they'll be eating
crow.
Crawdads.
Yeah, there you go.
Crawdads.
Crawdads. Not often you hear that reference. Okay. Corky in Rochester, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Corky.
Hello, Steph.
Hi.
Yeah, you got to get this out, man. These Democrats are poor salesmen. The Obamacare, you're forced to buy insurance, but if you don't use it, if you're a healthy young person, you get 80% of the premium back.
What?
You know, yeah, you get 80%.
What is your source for this information?
They have to spend 80% of what you pay on your health care. And then 20% they get to keep for administrative.
But no, that's not what the 80-20 rule is, Corky. It means that insurance companies need to spend 80% of your premium on actual health care,
right,
and not on over, you know, advertising. And
mm-hmm.
Okay, well... That was incorrect.
Yeah, that was
That was a talking point from the left that was completely incorrect. So
yeah.
You see, we are interested in facts here.
What are the death panels?
Right. Robert in Pasadena, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Steph. You know, the Republicans are kind of winning a little bit of this debate, and the Democrats need to do a little bit better job of it, you know. I think that the president needs to kind of get out in front and let everybody know that the Republican tactic of not wanting to extend the debt limit has other ramifications. I mean, they could use this in the future to, like, privatize Social Security, make cuts to Medicare, or
yeah,
any legislation that is already in place. So the president needs to let people know that. I mean, that if the Republicans succeed here, this is bad news for the future.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, I get exhausted. I can only imagine how he feels.
Yeah.
I'm literally just like, really? The debt ceiling again. Really? For the first time in history. I mean, as the president said, I think yesterday, about it's the first time ever that a party has taken a president or another party hostage,
right,
for the debt ceiling. We have already spent it. I mean, I'm sure people get tired of hearing it. I get tired of saying it. It's money. It does not add a nickel to the deficit. It's not out of control spending. We've already spent it. It's just, it's an automatic thing we've always done to keep the full faith and credit of the United States. I mean, this is why we got downgraded. I mean, and this is, I got to say, you know, this is, well, all right. Well, there's a lot to get to with that,
yes,
whole thing. It's just, I don't even know. My brain is twisted into a pretzel of rage.
Pretzels and beer.
Right.
And rage.
Okay.
And rage.
Only one thing can make it better,
oh,
now,
my.
And that is Tina Dupuy, editor of TheContributor.com, and her, she channels my rage about the food stamp thing.
She does.
In a funny way.
Yeah.
We'll talk to her about that next as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
What's the matter with everybody? Everybody's so grumpy every morning around here.
34 minutes after the hour. Well, there's something to be happy about today. It is Guy Lafleur's birthday. Guy Lafleur.
Bon anniversaire.
One of our favorite things to say, along with Sheboygan and Bark Bark. Happy birthday, Guy. All right, this is a whole just bouillabaisse of nonsense, this show.
Yeah.
All right.
This is news.
Guy Lafleur with the save. All right. By the way, also coming up on the show, Grampy sat on the pie.
What?
Careful of the apple pie.
Grampy McCain.
Uh-oh.
Grandpa, are you sitting on the pie?
Oh, dear.
I sure hope so.
Oh, Grampy, we will talk about how John McCain wrote it. His little, because he was like, his, like, right. You know. What do you call it? It was his, you know, response to Putin's editorial in the New York Times.
Bam, 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 Iran.
He is a befuddled Cold War relic, as Salon says. It's like the Prov. It's not the actual Pravda, which doesn't exist anymore. It's the,
right.
Like their National Enquirer or
whatever.
Daily Blaze or whatever. All right. Someone who would never be tricked into writing for something like that. Yeah.
Speaking of funny and smart,
yeah.
I want to bring on Tina Dupuy.
Oh.
Tina Dupuy is brilliant. She's funny. She's a terrific writer.
Tina does everything. Already.
Oh, good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Stephanie Miller.
Jim Ward is literally taking his clothes off as we speak. It's just a jacket, but still. He waited until your jingle to unclothe. All right, good morning. Pardon me, Jim?
Suddenly I felt the need to disrobe.
Yes.
I don't know what happened.
Are you more comfortable now?
Yes.
All right. Good morning, Tina.
And a good morning it is.
You know, can I just say, I say it here and it comes out there on the interwebs, what the GOP could learn from Pope Francis. I was just conflating the two, Tina, which goes to your great piece, too, about this unbelievable, them slashing $40 billion in food stamps for the poor.
Gobsmacking.
Yes, exactly.
Gobsmacking.
And you say
they also made it temporary, so you can only get food stamps for 3 months.
Oh,
great. Great.
We've replaced the Republican Congress with the Pope. Let's watch the fun.
But your headline is great. Congress people unwilling to work shall not eat. As you were saying, I mean, and this is something we've heard Michelle Bachmann and you also, what's his name, the other Republican congressman, they keep, that's the only, the one thing in the Bible they quote, right? Yeah.
Oh, right.
The one who is unwilling, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. Right.
Right, because they basically have been highlighting the parts of the Bible that talk about compassion towards the poor, you know, with a black Sharpie, and
right.
The other parts they want to quote that part so that they can disenfranchise the poor people.
Yeah,
so they can kick poor people when they're down. You know, and here's the thing. I mean, we've been talking about that in New York because we have. Now a mayoral candidate. Now I don't want to freak you out, but he's ahead by 40 points. There's all this. They show this on the local news all the time. But the Republican candidate is on really busy street corners in New York, trying to meet the voters, and people keep on walking past him, and it's kind of hilarious. But the man who is winning and actually doesn't have didn't even have to go into a runoff because he got 40% of the vote in the primary. Bill de Blasio, he has been running this populist vote, this populist campaign. And he said when I met him at back in the day, I mean, this was mm-hmm. a man, the reason why, this is a man I gave money to as a joke, because the week that Wiener's Wiener came out again,
right.
He got arrested. Bill de Blasio got himself arrested protesting a hospital being closed down. So I on Twitter, I said, you know, I just gave Bill de Blasio's campaign $100 for bail money. Hilarious, right? Well, the guy actually now might be end up being the mayor of New York City. And what he said, and I haven't heard another politician say this, is that during the Great Depression, no one said, we are going to start helping you. once the economy gets better.
Right.
But the GOP has done the exact opposite of that, saying we cannot help you, we will not help you because the economy is bad, and therefore it's because you guys are lazy schmucks. So why don't you get a better job? Because the reason why these people are hungry in the first place, it's because they don't have good jobs. They're right. working at places like McDonald's. They're working at places like Walmart, where they're working two jobs at places like McDonald's and
yeah.
places like Walmart,
yeah.
places that are subsidized by the government because their workforce is being fed by the government. So therefore, Walmart is receiving subsidies from the government. Our food, our farmers are subsidized
yeah.
by the government. Everybody else is on the government dole. Fincher, who likes to talk about, who likes to use this phrase, those who are unwilling to work shall not eat, he received money from the government. It was what, $3.5 million
in farm subsidies.
Farm subsidies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So he received money from the government. His state that he represents, the great state of Tennessee, is one of the poorest states, in the nation. For every dollar that people of Tennessee spend, give in, federal income tax, they receive 11 cents from the government.
I loved your
so
line.
They're on the dole.
Yeah, I loved your line. Hope you don't get subsidized Freedom Prize grease on your New Testament, Fincher. But you know, you phrase it perfectly. You see, are we a nation with a food store shortage? No. Are we a nation with hungry people? Yes. Why? Good question. Conservatives used to admit among themselves behind closed doors that food stamps are a way to keep crime down, a cost-cutting alternative to incarceration which would pacify the hungry masses. That was when conservatives cared about costs, unlike our current crop of nihilists who are comfortably bush-blind and vehemently pro-Amambo, which is the opposite of Obama. I love that. You coined that. But, I mean, look at the numbers. You say there's 46.2 million Americans impoverished. Right? And you say are nearly yes. one-sixth of our countrymen lazy parasites? The fact is, and I just made this point at the top of the show, Tina, the fact is besides the elderly, children, and the disabled, most of those who are formerly known as the working poor are now the working impoverished. So they're not lazy and not working. They're working. What does that say about America? And still don't make enough to eat.
Yeah, it says a lot about our lawmakers, that they're just absolutely tone deaf. But here's the thing. It's like instead of it's being able to deflect the fact that the economy is doing really, really well for the top 1%, And the rest of us are fighting over scraps, and they've been very successful at getting us to fight over the scraps. And the fact that, that low income people are upset that there might be some surfer somewhere not working and getting food stamps is a successful propaganda campaign
mm-hmm.
to get us to fight amongst ourselves.
You
the fact of the matter is there are people in this country, still the richest nation on earth, and they are malnourished. There are children who are not able to get the nutrients that they need in order to be successful, and that is going to affect us as a whole. We are in this together. We are not a socialist country, but we are still a country that is in this together.
Yeah.
We have a solution for this.
Right. You say instead of debating how we can possibly lift people out of poverty, we have a swarm of hissing cockroaches and neckties debating how to punish poor people for being too decadent with their $4.50 a day eating habits. And then it was nice of you to say, I apologize if I offended any cockroaches with a comparison to Congress. it was nicely done.
Thank you.
I mean, but it really, you know, that's the thing is, you know, you and I obviously use humor a lot, but this is one of those things that really, you know, you can hear it in your voice. It's just so disgusting. It really is. I mean, it's so disgusting.
I'm tasting bile in my mouth.
Yes. Yes, I'm tasting my own bile. Well, I mean, and as someone else pointed out, anybody can see deficits are falling at record levels. There was no reason to do this, right?
No, it's just punitive. It's just punitive. It's just trying to punish the poor. I mean, we talked about this before on your show, Stephanie. They like poor shaming because these people are so courageous that they like to kick the downtrodden. They like to kick people when they're down. I mean, this is like, I mean, you know, instead of going after, you know, these are basically Goliaths going and like, you know, and kicking people who are less than them. Yeah. You know, I mean, it is like, it is the height of being bullies and being lazy and being ineffective. I mean, these are people who voted 41 times to do nothing. This is like the most pathetic bunch of parasites, who've basically done nothing for the country. They're taking their government handouts, going on, and I love, Jackie Speier, who like went on,
she's awesome.
Yes.
She went to on the floor of Congress with caviar and vodka and showed what Representative King was eating in Russia and Argentina.
Yep.
Yeah.
After they voted to do this, and they've been doing this, but they've been basically taking their checks, going on vacation, working making the fewest amount of laws since they've been an organization, since they've been an institution.
Yep.
Embarrassing us as a country, downgrading our credit. I mean, the list goes on and on of what Congress, the House GOP.
No, I know,
GOP,
and now, right,
let's
now.
Let's not call it Congress. Let's call it the House GOP. John Boehner, specifically. I mean, 41 times, they're proud of it. Obamacare, 41 times. By
now they're threatening to shut down the government. Right. Now,
exactly.
Now that they've voted to take food stamps away from poor people, now they're threatening to shut the government down over taking health care away
from hungry children's mouths.
You are gargling in bile now, my friend. You are gargling.
You.
No, I love your outrage, and it's making Jim hot. So we have to go because he's really getting ready to do something inappropriate. Tina Dupuy, great stuff as always. Go to thecontributor.com.
He hasn't already done it. So that's
my pants
good.
Are still on. What?
His pants are tight. We have to go. All right. Love you, Tina Dupuy. Talk to you next time.
You're the best, Stephanie. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. There she goes. Jim, my pants are tight, Ward.
Mm-hmm.
46 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Happy Friday. Representative Adam Schiff coming up next hour. Sexy Devil John Fuglesang in hour number 3 for Fridays with Fuglesang.
Yes.
We'll see if the ecclesiastical mook has a thought or two on the Pope and on cutting food stamps to the poor. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Let's go to David in California. Hi, David.
Good morning, Steph. At least you make depressing news sound a little bit better. on the revolution, as far as the welfare cuts and with food stamps, that $40 billion...
It's not welfare, it's food stamps.
Yeah, they're two different things.
Well, food stamps, it's supposed to be projected over a 10-year period. It's
right.
Really only about... It's only $4 billion a year, which can actually be changed from year to year.
Mm.
But when you look at, we're going on 6 years without an actual budget, these continuing resolutions are a failure of all the way down from Obama to 435 of them in the House and the other 100 of them in the Senate. You know, if we went to a hotel and got service like they're, you know, giving us up there in Washington, we'd walk out of that hotel and never come back. We would complain if our oil change on our car was done as bad
right.
as guys are doing up there.
However, it's not. It doesn't. Blame doesn't fall equally. The president has been more than willing to negotiate on a budget for many, many years. The Republicans will not negotiate on anything. They're threatening to shut down the entire government over defunding the law of the land.
Well, the law of the land was not really supposed to have been adjusted. And he's already broken
yes,
that precedent.
Yes, he's much like dealing with the Syria situation. He's adjusted based on changing things that are changing and things that how can you enact something that huge without making tweaks? Do you think Social Security and Medicare never had any kind of tweaks when they were starting?
Oh, probably not. It probably
no.
was just as bad. And we're just
they were a disaster. Not in the mood for you. Okay. Yeah, they're a disaster. I think everyone can agree Social Security and Medicare.
Yes. should shut down the government if they're not defunding.
Right.
Too.
Yes. Let's get that while we're at it. Okay. Let's go. Yeah. Bill in Michigan. Hi, Bill. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Steph.
Hi.
On the same topic, I just had my in-laws over. They visited us from Florida, and they're kind of right-wing nut jobs. They belong to this right-wing church.
In Florida?
And it seems like,
what?
Yeah, believe it or not. and one of their one of the memes that seems to be going around is that there was no poverty before food stamps. My father-in-law was going on and on about how there were no poor people when he was a child.
Right, of course. The poor were just invented by the president.
Exactly.
Invented them. Right.
Well, they were created by food stamps and welfare, essentially.
Right. They were created by the black guy. Right.
And then when I pointed out to him that there was actually very high poverty when he was a child, he kind of lost it, basically.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry. Did he live through the Depression, for instance, or?
No, he was born. Well, part of it, but he was pretty much born just after.
Oh,
it.
So it didn't happen. Yeah, because he didn't.
No, he wasn't there,
it,
so
no, he
it
wasn't.
Didn't happen.
Right.
Didn't happen. There were no poor people.
He's just that kind of self-involved person.
Subsidies created poor.
There's
people.
No history that happened until I got
what?
Here. Jackie, and he is the life of the party. Nothing happens until he gets here.
Right.
Jackie in Arizona, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi there. I just wanted to add one point to this discussion of the working poor. I'm an Army brat. I've had kids in the military. There are a lot of hardworking military people on food stamps.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of hardworking people on food stamps. That's what we were saying.
So the military created
the conservatives. The military, the conservatives are so pro-military, but they're not even paying their military to the point that they can afford to buy their own food.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's so ridiculous, this, and it's so outdated. This,
yeah.
You know, did anyone use the word hobos or anything in the house yesterday?
It's that Roosevelt feller that caused it.
Speaking of outdated, I love the Salon headline. Confused senator attempts to publish column in communist newspaper from the distant past. Oh,
yeah.
Grampy. Oh, Senator McCain, really?
I expect you'll want to see my angry, crotchety grandpa discount card.
Oh, dear.
Sir, this card has expired.
But it's good for a lifetime.
Well, yours expired.
Oh, dear. Matt O'Blog writing, McCain didn't exactly write for the Pravda he was looking for. The communist newspaper he thought he was writing for shut down years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, Grampy.
It kind of shut down shortly after communism shut down.
Yeah. In McCain's mind, the Cold War is forever, and the senator ended up writing for a website with the same name that Slate describes as kind of a cross between WorldNet Daily and the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
Oh, Grampy. Salon saying, Senator John McCain, a man of his word, published his editorial, a stirring defense of the rights to free speech and dissent and political expression in Russia's Pravda, just like he said he would. One small problem. This isn't the famous Pravda.
No.
Oh, great.
It's not the Pravda he thought it was.
It's not his father's Pravda.
No.
Right. After the Soviet Union collapsed, the official propaganda organ was sold off and eventually closed. There is no more Pravda. Oh, boy. Let's see. There is now Pravda, the struggling thrice-weekly organ of what remains of the Communist Party, and Pravda.ru, a sensationalistic online-only news site few people in Russia take seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So after Putin published a provocative column in America's most prominent and trusted newspaper, The New York Times, John McCain basically submitted his response to the Russian equivalent of The Daily Blaze. McCain really couldn't have found a better way to illustrate that he's a befuddled Cold War relic with no idea whatsoever what Russia is like in 2013.
Damn commies!
A few minutes of research or any working knowledge of modern Russia, I guess, would have saved McCain some embarrassment. Oh, my God. Who was it that was testifying? Remember Jim before the Senate? He's like, why do I have to keep updating my apps?
Oh, that was, I think, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple.
Right.
Well, they did fix that with the new iOS.
He probably doesn't know how to install the Google app on his phone. He could have Googled it in 2 seconds.
Yeah. They fixed it with the new iOS that came out this week.
Oh, fabulous.
Updates in the background.
Salon finishing. If McCain's mission was to prove that the U.S. is run by sopalistic buffoons who don't even try to understand anything about the rest of the world before they go blundering out shouting hypocritical nonsense about freedom, well, mission accomplished. Way to make Putin look like a wise and prudent statesman, Senator. Oh, Grampy. Get off the pie. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, ha. Happy Friday, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Representative Adam Schiff of the great state of California joins us at the bottom of the hour. We will talk about the Navy Yard shooting and among other things with the great congressman from right there, from about right over there, 7 right feet away in Burbank.
Yeah.
Okay, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Sexy liberal John Fugelsang for Fridays with Fugelsang next hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another day, another, wow, this is the second one this week, of course. This in Chicago, 13 people, including a 3-year-old boy, were wounded by a flurry of gunfire in Chicago Park. Last night.
Yeah.
The latest round in the city's ongoing fight with gun violence. The shooting took place near a basketball court on the city's south side. The toddler was listed in critical condition after being shot in the ear, police said.
I think it's gang-related.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, and by the way, gun nuts, hold your calls about how Chicago has strict gun laws. We already got that talking point seven times yesterday.
Yeah.
Somebody said, by the way, you don't even have to go to Indiana, right outside the city limit in Chicago. Guns are easily accessible. It's nice try, but not a good argument for. Okay. By the way, it's voluntary, but gun-free zones will be Starbucks, thanks to the CEO of Starbucks. We were talking about yesterday, and that was nice, Jim. He just sort of asked. Would you be kind enough to leave your guns at home? Thanks. Be a lamb and leave your guns at home, won't you? Because we were saying, yesterday's story was a woman dropped her purse and shot her friend in the leg by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had a .22 in her purse that she forgot about. You know how it is.
Sure.
So she was trying to pay for a latte, dropped her purse, shot her friend in the leg.
I've never felt the need for a gun at Starbucks.
Yeah.
No, they play Nora Jones over the loudspeaker. That just calms you down.
See, I'm going to shoot.
Nora Jones.
I would keep that friend anyway, because imagine how many favors you could get. Really? You can't drive me to the airport? Remember the time you shot me in the leg at Starbucks? really? I can't borrow any money? Because remember my kneecap used to be here, and now it's...
now it's on the other side of my leg? Like Daffy Duck's bill
sideways.
really? I can't borrow that necklace? And remember when I could walk without a limp?
Shoot me now. Shoot me now.
You shot me.
You're despicable.
Starbucks, you dumb bitch. That friend would be just
indispensable. You can't get
me
a ride in your car, which you drive because you have two functioning legs?
Oh, I think some people do just stay in relationships because they have a lot of good on the person.
Probably.
Really? Oh,
remember that time back in 1982?
No. The other woman just starts to sense. I know, I shot you in the leg at Starbucks. Okay, what do you want? Just be like an ongoing hostage crisis. Okay, what do you need today?
That's blackmail for the rest of your life.
Because I shot you in the leg at Starbucks. All right. Oh, kids, you know... Rocky Mountain Mike graces us once again.
A young hipster named Billy Joe grew restless in his loft. A boy equipped with an Android pad and games like Lara Croft. He changed his clothes and shined his boots and grabbed him $20. And his lady said as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to Starbucks. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't mix your guns with grounds." He sang a song as he rode his old Vespa motorbike. He saw that sign at Starbucks, "If you're packing, take a hike." He said, "I'll have a grande decaf French roast. Here's $8. The barista said, "No way, Jose. Don't take your guns to Starbucks. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't mix your guns with grounds."
Thank you, Rocky Mountain Mike. Oh, where is my troll be gone? Hi, Tim in Chicago.
Good morning. And I just wanted to point out that if you're from Illinois, you cannot buy a gun in Indiana unless you have an Illinois Troid card, which stands for Firearms Owner Identification. So you can't just go into Indiana and purchase a gun. And if you're a criminal, Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you shouldn't be purchasing guns anyway, but criminals don't obey the law.
Right, but thanks to the NRA, you mostly can.
Yeah.
No, that's
yes.
not true.
Yes.
I just told you the law. I'm from Illinois. I'm from Chicago, and you cannot do that. You can't go into Indiana and purchase guns.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. There are certain restrictions, but yes, you can purchase a gun.
Yes, you can. Do I have my troll be gone? I feel that for whenever there is a gun incident, Jim, it just seems that there is a... The trolls multiply
well,
like
that. Sure, I'll bring my Eddie Foy card.
Like bacteria.
Indiana.
Food you've left out overnight. Darnell in Las Vegas, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh, hang on, Darnell, I have to spray first. I'm sorry.
Are you tired of cranky callers and childish chatters who only want a harsher talk show buzz? You've spent a lot of time and effort producing the best show possible, only to have them poop in your punch bowl. Well, not anymore. Introducing Troll Be Gone, the strongest solution for ridding your calls and chat rooms of troublemaking trolls. Just one spray, and Troll Be Gone.
I've been a chat room moderator for years. I used to fight with trolls all the time. Now I just spray them away from Ustream, live blogs, Twitter feeds, and Facebook profiles. Apply liberally, and it lasts for weeks.
Check out Troll Be Gone in action.
I'm a small business owner.
Look at the monkey.
I try to listen to both sides.
Order Troll Be Gone today, now available in our 5-gallon concentrate.
You know what?
All right, now it's safe. Hi, Darnell in Las Vegas. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello.
Well, I'll be darned. Three times you announced my name on the air.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Hello.
I might even play a lottery this weekend. Hey, listen, I'd like to thank you guys. You guys had a great show. And as a veteran of these United States, I just find it mind-boggling that people were voting for interest. I mean, the Republicans are completely putting it all out there on the table, and people aren't really seeing much on the outside of those that don't have access to media. What do you do? What do you say? I mean, you know, I get an argument with my friend as a truck driver sometimes about how could you vote against somebody that wants to take away food from those who can't afford it? It just blows me out of the water. Help me out, guys.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. I cannot give you a hand. I am as befuddled as you.
Yeah.
Speaking of befuddled, so we were talking about Grampy McCain sitting on the pie again.
Yeah.
It's time for another edition of 6 Degrees of Rachel Maddow Separation. So, as you know, Rachel has told me that her dad, Bob, who listens to my show every day, calls her every day to tell her what I said on my show.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Elaine. And now I read from Maddow Blog to complete the the great Steve Bannon writes on Maddow Blog. On one hand, the Beltway conventional wisdom is that President Obama erred terribly in Syria by getting everything he wanted without firing a shot. To his credit, David Ignatius, you sent me this in the Washington Post, marveled at the bizarre dynamic in his column today. Obama can propose what the country wants, succeed at it, and still get hammered as a failure. On the other hand, the Beltway conventional wisdom is that Senator John McCain is a foreign policy expert, despite evidence to the contrary. How much do you want to bet he will be in a green room show somewhere this Sunday as an expert, even though he just wrote... He basically just got pranked and wrote a column for, I don't know, the Russian National Enquirer.
Exist anymore, right.
Right. Right. A fictional Cold War Pravda.
I don't think it's the Pravda you think it is.
Yeah. Yes. Steve Bannon writes, Steve McCain didn't exactly write for the Pravda he was looking for, the communist newspaper he thought he was writing for. Shut down years ago. In McCain's mind, the Cold War is forever.
And this is not the propaganda organ you're looking for.
So he wrote the Russian, as they say, they call it a cross between WorldNet Daily and the National Enquirer. I mean, Russians are just laughing their asses off. And, you know, like clockwork, he will get put on a show this Sunday to talk about what a boob President Obama was.
Look, they have left it off.
First of all, he goes to Syria and meets with the kidnappers by accident. I mean, he's just, really? And the president is the stumble bum who just sort of, you know.
Grampy sat on the pie again.
Right. Oh, Grampy. He finishes, many Republicans in recent weeks have insisted that Putin got the better of Obama. I find that hard to take seriously, although if Republicans are prepared to talk about Putin getting the better of McCain, we'll find plenty of common ground. Thank you, Steve Bannon, Maddow Blog. David Ignatius's piece in the Washington Post. I sometimes have to spoon with Michael Tomasky or Bob Seska to sure that you do not think I'm crazy. And now David Ignatius, another writer boy crush. Thank you. Obama is criticized for the right result on Syria. This is what drives me insane. It's the mainstream media, and it really is. He really makes great points. He says, how did it happen that less than a year after Barack Obama convincingly won re-election, his every move as president now draw hoots and catcalls from nearly every point on the political spectrum? What's puzzling about this latest bout of Obamaphobia is that recent developments in Syria have generally been positive from the standpoint of U.S. interests. Yeah, remember that one, you know, kind of what was good for America was somehow, call me crazy, but that was the thing we all were like,
that's what David Gregory thinks.
Right. Obama has accomplished goals that most Americans endorse, given the unpalatable menu of choices. As we've said, it's not like there was a good option in Syria.
Right.
But this is certainly the best one we could have hoped for right now. He says ABC News, Washington Post poll, the public overwhelmingly backs the course Obama has chosen. The ABC News Washington Post poll asked Americans if they endorsed the U.S.-Russia plan to dismantle Syrian chemical weapons as an alternative to missile strikes. 79, that's almost 80%, Jim.
Yeah.
We're supportive of that. Yet the opinion of the elites is sharply negative. I'll be on the Ed Show today on MSNBC. And last week I was on debating Mike Papantonio, who is beating up, who I love.
Mm-hmm. We've had on the show.
Who is beating up on the president over Syria. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, anyway. This is what David Ignatius also says. The opinion of the elites, sharply negative. Here's what I see when I deconstruct the Syria story. And he breaks down the fun facts for us in a very understandable way. Russia has been drawn into the process of collecting and destroying Syria's chemical arsenal. This has been a goal of U.S. policy for 2 years. It finally worked, thanks in part to Obama's pledge to use military force to punish Syria if the Russians didn't step up. In this messy world, there's considerable value in agreement between Moscow and Washington. Thank you. The United Nations has taken new steps to affirm the international norm against the use of chemical weapons. The report delivered this week, which we just talked about, to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, is not a joke, as some predicted. It's surprisingly thorough, careful documentation of the horrific attack on August 21st. But the evidence demolishes the absurd Russian-Syrian claim that the weapons were used by the rebels. The U.S. and Russia have restarted their push for negotiations in Geneva toward a ceasefire and a political transition in Syria. Oh, that's what Grampy predictably said last week? Oh, what happened when Assad has to go? That was not a policy. What happened to that? It's like, Grampy, just wait there on the pie.
Yeah.
Write, you get pranked by writing for some other fictional Russian newspaper. Anyway, he says the Russians know that Assad must go. Eventually, they've now moved a little closer to a framework for beginning that transition. First of all, like, let's take care of the chemical weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't, if Assad went, you wouldn't have gotten that outcome. It's like...
Right.
Anyway, David Ignatius finishes, amid all this diplomacy, Obama has pressed ahead with a covert program of training and assistance for the moderate Syrian rebel forces headed by General, what's his name? My Syrian sources say that these CIA-trained commandos make a difference as they take the field and begin to tip the balance away from the jihadist fighters associated with al-Qaeda, which has obviously been everybody else's fear. The mystery is why this outcome in Syria is derided by so many analysts in Washington. Partly it must be the John McCain factor, because McCain is a distinguished figure somehow. He commands respect even when his proposals have no political support at home. Not so Obama. He can propose what the country wants, succeed at it, and still get hammered as a failure. And John McCain still somehow has credibility on these issues. I mean, it's just... thank you, David Ignatius. Washington Post. Good stuff.
Is he a new boyfriend?
Yes. Yes. And you know what I'm going to do to make things up to Alan Grayson? I'm going to play his awesome sound bites from the Benghazi testimony.
Yeah.
Because we disagreed on Syria, respectfully, when he was here. And I, you know, but he did an amazing job at the Benghazi hearings. Because it's just, Joan Walsh said it best in Salon, Daryl Issa's pathetic, error-laden obsession continues. I mean, he's just an embarrassment.
But you won't hear that part of the testimony on the evening news or on Fox News or even on CNN.
No, of course not. 19 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like her? It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Get it. 24 minutes after the hour. 1 a.m. Well, yeah. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. I was talking about the Syrian situation before the break. John Kerry yesterday.
Time is short. Let's not spend time debating what we already know. Instead, we have to recognize that the world is watching to see whether we can avert military action and achieve through peaceful means even more than what those military strikes promised.
Yeah, and he deserves great credit, and so does Hillary Clinton, as everybody was saying, and the president for how this all came together. In the meantime, I love Joan Walsh's piece, Daryl Issa's pathetic, error-laden obsession continues.
Daryl Issa?
Issa. He's despicable, in my opinion.
I put it there.
I mean, look, this Benghazi thing is about one thing, Hillary. Yep. As she says at the end, nothing will prevent Issa from making a damning case about Clinton's leadership, whether one exists or not. I mean, it's just, it is so pathetic, this Benghazi obsession. Joan Walsh writes, at his latest Benghazi hearing, the GOP oversight czar quickly had to retract a central cover-up claim. Oops. All you really need to know about Daryl Issa's renewed crusade to get the truth about last year's Benghazi attacks is his report on the alleged accountability review board whitewash, quote unquote, mentions Hillary Clinton 33 times.
Yeah.
You know what he is? He is
turkey.
Right. He is a turkey. Thank you, Hillary. Oh, and it also got a key factor two wrong, at least. On Thursday, Mike Mullen and Ambassador Thomas Pickering testified at the House Oversight hearing, arranged to promote ICE's newest scandal, his claim of the ARB protected Clinton from responsibility, blah, blah, blah. ICE does not appear to realize that Clinton immediately and repeatedly took full and public responsibility for the deaths in Benghazi. Sadly for ICE, he immediately had to retract one of his report's most inflammatory charges that Mullen had undermined the review board's credibility by giving Cheryl Mills, the longtime Clinton aide, an inappropriate heads up before her testimony. I mean, how many times is he going to have to get shot down on all of this Benghazi nonsense? ISA called the distortion of Mullen's actual testimony an unintentional typo, even though he's been hyping it as central to his whitewash, quote-unquote, charges. Another day, another Daryl ISA embarrassment. Some of it courtesy of our good friend, former and future current Congressman Alan Grayson.
Who decided that Ambassador Stevens go to Benghazi on September 11, 2012?
It was the ambassador's decision, sir.
Now, was Secretary Clinton responsible in any way for reviewing and approving the in-country movements of U.S. ambassadors, either Ambassador Stevens or anyone else?
No, sir. Under departmental policy, ambassadors only need Washington permission if they leave their country of assignment, not the capital city.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oops, Daryl. And we have, I believe, a little
more. Did the ambassador, when he went to Benghazi, have a normal security detail in accordance with the State Department procedures and rules at that time?
Yes, sir. He had two diplomatic security special agents who accompanied him from Tripoli to Benghazi.
Was there any money that was appropriated for the purpose of improving that post that was unspent at that time?
No, sir. There was no specific money appropriated from Benghazi. We were simply taking money from other locations, but all the requests that they put forward, as I mentioned, save one, which is the guard towers, which were determined to be unnecessary and potentially too attention-getting. All their requests were fulfilled.
I think ISA needs a BS alarm that goes off whenever he opens his yap.
Yeah, there you go. He needs another alarm. Any more? We have a little more? Okay, here we go.
Did the White House ever ignore any reports regarding this attack?
No, sir, not that I'm aware of.
Did Secretary Clinton ever ignore any reports regarding this attack?
No, sir. I personally spoke to Secretary Clinton that evening, and Secretary Clinton was being constantly briefed by our operations center all evening.
If you had been the President of the United States on that night, would you have done anything different?
What I know that the President did was to say to the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, do everything that you can. And I think that's probably what I would have done, was turn to my senior military command authority and tell them to do whatever was necessary, which is what he did.
Yep.
Oh, dear. Oh, Daryl. Oh, Daryl. Got a little deflated congressional party balloon. Sorry. 29 minutes after the hour.
Hire his brother, Daryl, and his other brother, Daryl.
Yeah. Representative Adam Schiff, next.
Stephanie Miller
lives down the block. Sensor modeling days in New York.
Stephanie Miller.
Have developed a taste for rich food and rich men.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 34 minutes after the
part
hour.
Part of that's right.
1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Jim, who said we can't have these tragedies take place every few weeks, every few months, and sit in our hands? It's very frustrating that we can't seem to get even a watered-down universal background check bill through the Senate, but that doesn't mean we can stop trying. There's a lot of tough issues involved with this most recent shooting, and there aren't going to be a lot of easy answers. Who said that?
Stephen Hawking.
No, bad guess. Representative Adam Schiff, our own personal congressman. Not that we own in a corrupt kind of way, but just that he's from the congressman from right there.
You and I are both constituents.
Thank you. Good morning, Congressman Schiff.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good, sir.
I was trying to figure out the answer to that question.
I didn't mean to that we own you. We just meant that you are our actual congressman. We are in your district.
Excellent. Well, and you let me know whatever you need.
All right. Well, listen, we've given you a list of potholes, and so far nothing has been done. But you've been talking about more important stuff. Obviously, that quote you were on MSNBC talking about this, you know, and you must get exhausted having to talk about the latest gun tragedy and, you know, knowing that, as you say, it seems like there's very little chance we're going to get anything done. I love what you said, but standing by and accepting that this is going to become the new normal in America, we cannot let that happen. We have to find a way to move those folks in the Senate and move people here in the House and just make forward progress. I'm not willing to accept, I think Americans are not willing to accept, this is going to become a fact of our lives now. I mean, obviously, Congressman, 90% of the American people agree with you. What do we do about this? What do we do?
Well, this is an amazing thing, and it shows how our political process right now is broken. The American people overwhelmingly support a truly universal background check bill. A majority of Americans would like to see bans on assault weapons and extended ammunition clips, but we can't do what the public wants, and it's not as if we can't do what the public wants because the public is acting irrationally or there's, you know, some unique circumstances that are compelling this that are not well thought through. This is, you know, clearly well thought through. It's the result of numerous shootings, time after time, going through these national traumas. And yet the Congress has proved incapable of delivering what the public wants. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that, but we're just going to have to find better reasons to overcome it. It's just we can't accept this continual paralysis in the face of the most horrific tragedies.
You know, you made another point, Congressman, yesterday on MSNBC. You said we're going to look at the background check system, and I think there are overlaps with Snowden, particularly some vulnerabilities that we have when there is new derogatory information on someone who has already gotten the clearance. How do we get that into the system, either to have that security clearance pulled or make sure they don't get another? I mean, obviously that's one of the other issues here. Because obviously, and we were saying, I mean, in the Snowden case, I mean, he went into this job knowing he was going to do this. It's, you know, stole people's, clearances that had higher clearance than he did to do specifically what he did, right?
I don't know whether he knew that's what he was going to do when he joined the intelligence community or whether it was a combination of factors, including frustration that he wasn't advancing within the intelligence community. But whatever his motivation, there were enough kind of warning signs about him that should have sent up red flags, but didn't. There were new facts that came to light that somehow didn't get input into the system and didn't trigger any kind of action or revocation of his clearance. And, you know, very similarly in the case of Alexis, there, you know, should have been all kinds of red flags going up. And, in fact, the Navy was made aware of his telling a police department he thought people were, you know, beaming signals into his brain, hearing voices, and yet nothing was done. This is really kind of a monumental task to revise and strengthen our background system, background checks in terms of making sure that people aren't giving clearances that are likely to give away the country's national secrets or take up arms against the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Congressman, and it's interesting, of course, there is all kinds of fallout. As you know, the president of Brazil just canceled, you know, a meeting and a state dinner with the president over the Snowden revelations. And, you know, there was somebody I spoke to high up in the Obama administration in the security area that's what they said. It's not just what, you know, this revealed to our enemies, but to our friends, to people that help us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think about, for example, the Manning leaks, and I was the subject of one of those leaked documents. I had a meeting years ago with Zardari, Musharraf. And that became public when those documents were leaked. And, you know, one of the things it does, among many others, is it tells these foreign leaders that they can't speak with confidence to us anymore without thinking that it's going to be splashed on the front pages of a newspaper.
Yeah.
So that, you know, doesn't help in terms of, you know, breaking through the clutter and getting to the heart of issues about, you know, everything from, you know, potential Pakistani ISI complicity with the Afghan Taliban or anything else if you can't have candid conversations.
Well, right. I mean, and you said yesterday, I do think we use contractors too much. We're too reliant on them. In fact, we've shifted a lot of functions that are inherently government functions, particularly in the intelligence area, to private contractors that we shouldn't do, that I think was done under this kind of overarching philosophy. Let's privatize things, but the essential government functions ought to be kept within the government. And that's exactly, as you say, and that certainly goes to this the latest of the Navy Yard thing as well.
It really does. And, you know, we went through the swing of the pendulum where there was this great emphasis on privatizing things. And, you know, we've seen some of the real flaws in that. And, you know, a couple of flaws. You know, one, we're seeing graphically the security flaw with that. But there's also a financial flaw, and that is this was all supposed to save us money. But, in fact, there's been study after study showing that a lot of the contracting outwork we're doing, we're just paying people outside the government to do the same things that they were doing within the government, but we're paying them two, three, or four times more. So it isn't cost-effective either, but it also has very serious security repercussions.
Well, and also, you know, as I, you know, I agreed with the president when he said, look, we were, you know, we can have these conversations about, you know, privacy and security without, you know, damaging our national intelligence, and that goes right to this headline, Representative Schiff introducing legislation to reform FISA court. Why, look at that. I mean, those are the things the president talked about, that, you know, getting an adversarial voice in the FISA court and other things that I think are, you know, because like you say, certainly it's not that there aren't, you know, concerns that were brought up, but, you know, again, go ahead.
That's exactly right. And when the president made his early remarks about reform in this area and wanting more transparency, you know, the thing that really struck me about what he said, that he was serious about it, was when he talked about having this public interest advocate, making an adversarial process available within the FISA court. That is probably the most sweeping of all the reforms that have been proposed. That would really change the way the FISA court does business, not in the kind of garden variety one-off warrant where, you know, much like a judge in a proceeding where the prosecutor gets a search warrant and there's no adversarial process, but in those cases where the court is being asked to grant whole new programs or address completely new constitutional issues and issues of first impression, the court would really benefit from having an independent voice there. The president has recognized that. The bill introduced would seek to accomplish that. It would give this Privacy and Civil Liberties Board the ability to appoint attorneys to a pool that the court can draw on in these cases. And, you know, I hope we can move this forward.
So speaking of moving forward, the Republicans, being quite helpful as usual, they, fresh from cutting $40 billion in food stamps for the working poor, they are threatening now to shut the government down once again, right, over defunding, the Affordable Care Act. What's it like to be you and go to work every day?
Well, this is now going to be the 43rd vote to defund, Obamacare. You know, we've caught up to the number of presidents in history. We're on George W. now, the 43rd vote.
Yeah.
On and it's astounding to me, and, you know, it's frustrating, obviously. It's bewildering considering it has a dampening impact on our economy. But the thing that really grabs me lately about this 43rd vote is, you know, plainly this is being done to throw some red meat to the conservative base. But I have to think that even the conservative base at this point has to realize they're just being manipulated, that there's no hope of any of this becoming law. And are they really satisfied that to have these kind of token gestures? I mean, I find that astounding. It's such a kind of blatant manipulation of their base. I'm amazed that it still works.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you shake your head. I mean, in the history of our country, you're like, okay, so as the president has said, a law that passed, you know, that the Supreme Court upheld, that he has won two landslide elections on this issue. And now the fact that they're trying to tie it to, you know, the debt ceiling and shutting down the entire United States government. This to me seems, you know, if we think we've been here before, this really is some sort of tipping point, isn't it?
You know, it's certainly doubling down on crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is that, you know, Americans, you know, have a mixed view on the healthcare reform. But they are, you know, a very strong majority of Americans is quite adamant that this ought to be improved and given a chance to work rather than repealed. Even a very substantial number of Republicans feel that way. And I think it's a, you know, tribute to the public that they recognize there's merit in having a tough issue, having a tough fight over it, making a decision, and then not revisiting it every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, trying to make it work, not relitigating, not refighting the same old fights over and over again. The public recognizes that. It's time for the majority here in the House to recognize that.
I'm sure you heard John Boehner say this yesterday.
While the president is happy to negotiate with Vladimir Putin, he won't engage with the Congress on a plan to that deals with the deficits that threaten our economy.
Oh, my God. Really? I mean, this is the thing. How many times can you say it? The debt ceiling has nothing to do with the deficit. It's money you've already spent.
I'm just trying to figure out who Bashar Assad is in that scenario.
But I mean, and deficits are falling at record levels. Like, this isn't...
it's a money problem.
Oh, my God.
It's really maddening because, you know, had we had a more rational approach over the last couple of years and didn't have the last, you know, fiscal cliff showdown and the suppressive impact of the sequester, our economy now, I'm confident, would be humming along. But we have artificially, in a man-made crisis kind of way, have put the brakes on our economic recovery. And that's just caused a lot of damage and hurt and pain on the American people that's completely unnecessary.
Well, Congressman, now that you bring that up, I've asked this before, but is there a way to undo this sequester? Or is this just, I mean, I don't know where we're headed with all this.
You know, there is. I think there's a growing number of moderate GOP voices, you know, certainly outside the Congress, but now even inside the Congress that recognize this is the, you know, the worst of all economic policies in its indiscriminate nature and in its draconian nature. Hal Rogers is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. Issued a statement, you know, really blistering the sequester and saying it's been rejected by the House. You know, they pulled the transportation bill because even the GOP members couldn't vote for the draconian cuts to infrastructure. So, you know, when you have the chairman of these GOP committees that are part of the GOP leadership making statements like that, it signals there's a change going on. You know, they're still at war with the Tea Party, and that war has to be resolved before we can move forward. But there is, I think, a growing number of voices that recognize the destructive character of the sequester.
Yep, absolutely. Congressmanship, great stuff. I had so much to talk to you about, and we packed it all in. We will talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much for your time.
You bet.
All right, there he goes. Great congressman from
right there.
Okay, 47 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Right, right. You're bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say. Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Mm-hmm. 52 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12. Fridays with Sexy Liberal John Fugelsang, all next hour, live from the New York Bureau. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Ken in Iowa, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, Steph.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
There's a really good letter in the Star Tribune this morning that points out that Al Flandin ran for president in 36 against Roosevelt,
uh-huh,
almost completely. Calling Social Security, he wanted to repeal Social Security, which he called corrupt, unconstitutional, hostile to business, and mired in waste and inefficiency. That sounds almost like what they're saying.
Yeah.
And that's why he lost.
Good, nice point. All right. We learn from history what we don't learn from.
What?
Huh?
I forget.
What are you quoting?
Okay.
We
get
in
to get out of Iraq
as
carefully,
hard
as carelessly as we got.
History is easy.
Okay.
What?
I ain't got to put food on there. Fool me once. Okay.
We'll
all right.
Then we'll get fooled again.
People expect by Friday I'm just running on fumes.
Well, then, and they're
seeds,
getting it today.
Seeds and stems and stray thoughts. It's all sediment by Friday.
Yeah.
All right. Except when John Boehner says stuff like this.
Well, the president is happy to negotiate with Vladimir Putin, he won't engage with the Congress on a plan that deals with the deficits that threaten our economy.
Yeah, that whole Putin thing is kind of important.
Yeah.
Like trying to avoid World War III.
I love this. Jay Carney says Boehner has Putin envy.
Yeah.
Said he has a case of Putin envy. He said the video, I thought, demonstrated a little Putin envy, a little odd, a bit of Putin envy on the part of the speaker. Maybe he can explain it. White House spokesman defined the term on Twitter, Putin envy, when one pretends for political purposes to want negotiations with a president who they said they'd never negotiate with again.
Yeah.
President Obama and, of course, congressional Democrats have repeatedly said they will not negotiate with Republicans over raising the debt ceiling. Meanwhile, the House GOP is pushing a plan that offers a one-year debt ceiling hike, along with approval of the Keystone Pipeline tax reform, meaning more tax cuts for the rich,
right,
and a one-year delay of Obamacare. Well, what's not negotiating about that?
Wow. Here's what we propose. You give us everything you want, and you can just go suck it.
Exactly. Thank you. The president's carny.
The president will be in conversations with congressional leaders in the coming days about the need to deal with these pressing deadlines.
Yes, just pressing to say the least, Jake
Carney. It is absolutely correct that prior to 2011, no party to the budget agreements of the past had ever threatened default if it did not get its way ideologically.
Yeah, do you hear Boehner? Oh, this happens all the time. This happens to presidents. No, it doesn't.
Nope.
Ever.
Didn't happen to Georgie Bush.
Wow, guess who thinks it's a bad idea? Karl Rove.
What?
Why, look here. So the desire to strike at Obamacare is praiseworthy. Little turd blossom. But any strategy to repeal, delay, or replace the law must have a credible chance of succeeding or affecting broad public opinion positively, he wrote. The defunding strategy doesn't. Going down that road would strengthen the president while alienating independents. It's an ill-conceived tactic, and Republicans should reject it. Oh, dear. He also cited polling showing the tactic is incredibly unpopular with independents. Rove has criticized the plan before, calling it a gigantic stick on which to beat us. With which to beat us.
Hmm.
Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, my God.
And Harry Reid, to not to put too fine a point on it.
Any bill that defunds Obamacare is dead. Dead.
Dead.
Dead. I'm very, sorry you had to see me like that.
Most sincerely dead.
As coroner, I must aver, I thoroughly examined her.
And once again, for your entertainment pleasure, we do Assad having a conversation with Harry Reid.
But I was told I could keep my stapler. No, you can't have a stapler.
In a quiet room.
No, if it's not, if it's a chemical stapler.
But and I then, hard of hearing, Darth Vader comes in.
What? Ow! What?
And
ow!
The wax vac guy.
What?
Somehow is
ow!
In the same room. Okay. All right, sorry. I just dotted off into somewhere. Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Senator Schumer yesterday.
We're sending a strong message to the House. We will not blink. Don't get it into your heads that we will. We won't. Don't make it part of your strategy that eventually we'll cave. We won't. We're unified. We're together. You're not.
No.
Boom. Boom. Take that. Yeah, by the way, have you seen the latest fight between they're shoving Ted Cruz into the bleachers?
Uh-huh. That was awesome.
In a day marked by the clash between House Republicans and Senator Ted Cruz over defunding Obamacare, Representative Pete King said we as House Republicans should stop letting Ted Cruz set our agenda for us.
Oh.
He should stay in the Senate and keep quiet.
Oh.
Fight. If he can deliver on this, fine. If he can't, he should keep quiet from now on, and we shouldn't listen to him. King's remarks reflected a widely held sentiment among House Republicans about how Cruz and others have pressured the lower chamber to pass a government spending bill that defunds Obamacare. Yeah, he totally pulled the rug out from under them because it can't be done. Here he is, Ted Cruz.
I will do everything necessary and anything possible to defund Obamacare.
Why don't you move back to Alberta and get some of that Canadian health care?
Yeah.
The Boehner yesterday. Here we go. Okay. John Boehner.
We'll deliver a big victory in the House tomorrow. Then this fight will move over to the Senate,
right.
where it belongs.
Right.
I expect my Senate colleagues to be up for the battle.
Right. Here he comes. Right. To your leader, Ted Cruz. Here he is, Senator Cruz.
This is a moment for Republicans to unite, for every Senate Republican to stand shoulder to shoulder with the gentlemen here and the Republicans in the House who have been courageous doing the right thing.
Who's with me? Who's with me? Let's go!
Dweeb. 58 minutes after the hour. Fridays with Bugle sang next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yahoo! Happy Friday! 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. You can email us all there, executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward. Or me, Stephanie Miller, the Pope being Popey, what better day to talk to?
A blessing from the Lord. God be praised.
God be praised.
Hello. Hello, my personal comedy Jesus.
Come unto me, my children. Come unto me.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yes. Hello, sir. What about that Pope?
What about that Pope? He says, be nice to the atheists. Don't be mean to people who've had abortions. Be nice to the gays. If he starts talking about women's rights, he better hire a really good food taster, you know?
Yeah. Somebody tweeted that he's just asking for a Tea Party primary challenge from the right.
I don't know how to handle a Democratic president who acts like a Democrat when it comes to health care and a Pope who acts like Jesus in the same lifetime. This is more than I could hope for.
Yeah. For those of you that please take your organ out for the ecclesiastical MOOC, please. New York Times headline, Pope bluntly faults church's focus on gays and abortion. Pope Frank, as we like to call him.
Sure.
Said the Roman Catholic Church has grown obsessed with preaching about abortion, gay marriage, and contraception. He's chosen not to speak on any of those issues, despite recriminations from some critics. He sought to set a new tone for the church, saying it should be a home for all. What? And not a small chapel focused on doctrine, orthodoxy, and a limited agenda of moral teachings. He said it's not necessary to talk about these issues all the time.
Wow.
And on cue, I see an article in front of me, what the GOP could learn from the Pope. Right?
Well, in both cases, keep in mind, it's kind of been about fundraising for a long time. And that's the big thing here. Follow the money, right? I mean, this Pope says the church is obsessed with abortion and gay marriage, which enraged followers of Jesus, who never talked about abortion or gay marriage. But this Pope has got actually a really good job because he's got two things to do. Number one, he has to deflect this whole notion everyone has of the Catholic Church from this pedophilia scandal problem. But number two, he's got to try to get people back in the pews. He's got to try to get more old ladies opening up their pocketbooks to dump money in. You travel around Catholic churches in America, and what do you see? A lot of old people in the pews who can't understand that foreign language priest that's talking to them. There's a real crisis, and it's shown that by being hateful to gay people, being hateful to women who've had abortions, it's not helping the church anymore on an economic level. And what he did was really smart in addition to being really moral.
By the way, we had your good friend Tina Dupuy on earlier today. See? But, you know, we were just saying this whole timing of, you know, the Pope talking about this stuff and the Republicans voting to cut $40 billion in food stamps.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steph.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm doing this movie right now for PBS, you know, and I'm in New England and I'm on the road for the next 40 odd days. And I've just been exposed to so many American stories that you never see on the news. I was with a 32-year-old grandmother in Rhode Island who's had her power turned off since July. I talked to cops and firemen who are retired who were called into a meeting one day and told their pensions were being cut in half. Wow. I've been to prisons. I'm in a hospital right now. I'm going to a homeless shelter this afternoon. These guys are evil. These guys aren't saying let's cut funding for the Pentagon, which is what we should do if we were a sane and moral society. Mm-hmm. These guys aren't saying let's cut subsidies to oil companies where we give them $600 million just for being themselves. They're saying let's attack those at the bottom of the economic rung. Let's make it worse. Let's kill the American dream even more. And it's not just that they're bad politicians. They are fake Christians. They are fake patriots, and they are fake capitalists. They don't believe in the American dream and work hard and get ahead. They're making it impossible to work hard and get ahead, so they're not patriots. Well, they're not really capitalists, and they're not chinos. They're Christians in name only, or chinos. And as you know, chinos can be white, they can be brown. Most are beige, many are wrinkled, and they're all irregular. And these guys are part of the... Ted Cruz is like a guy trying to sell you an above-ground pool, and he won't stop. And you're like, I live in an apartment, my friend, you need this. No, I live in a one-room apartment, you need an above-ground pool, friend. He's creepy, and it's a pleasure to watch Ted Cruz ripping the GOP apart.
Yes.
Yeah, it's terrific. I mean, but I was going to say quickly, you know, Tina writes, I mean, what you do so well is talk about how selective they are in their Bible phrases, and the one you've seen Michelle Bachmann and, you know, other Republicans say is, that, you know, he who will not work should not eat.
Yeah.
I mean,
can I tell you how full of crap that is? Because Jesus never says that in the Bible. God never says that in the Bible. No one says that in the Bible. Paul says in the past tense in his letter to Thessalonians that when you were building the society, those who wouldn't work didn't eat. Okay, he's talking in the past tense about what some people used to do. Jesus is the one who says, if your brother asks you to walk a mile with him, you walk another mile. If he asks you for your cloak, you give him two. Jesus is the one who says, you go the extra mile for the guy in need, which is proof. And I'm taking the Bible as literal fact. If you believe in it, these guys are not Christian, and they have lost and forever forfeited the right to be called that.
And I think it more applies to Congress if you're talking about he who will not work or do anything. Maybe they should starve.
Yeah, what about he who's on vacation all the time and has an enormous pension that we'll be paying for the rest of our lives?
Yeah.
These guys are not civic leaders. They're not public servants. They are shills of the worst part of the upper 1%. And the sooner the decent conservative, social conservative voters out there realize that they've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and led astray by these snake oil salesmen, the better they can get some real people in there. Because I don't know what's going to happen
with
the public party.
Here is a champion of the poor, Eric Cantor, who just stepped in from a Montauk for a moment to say
this. The reforms made by this bill will put people on the path to self-sufficiency and independence.
Mm, mm, mm. Wouldn't you like to put him on that path himself?
Yeah, let's see how you do.
Yeah.
Tell us how you do.
They never talk about defense contractors being dependent on big government, do they? They never talk about the Pentagon being dependent on big government or oil companies being dependent on big government. No, it's only poor people. And the worst part about it is they're mean to the bone, okay? These are a bunch of godless, motherless thugs. But they don't even mean it. They know President Obama will never sign this into law. They know the Senate will never go along with this. They are being mean because that's how they get votes, and they are trying to get votes from the mean people. Ted Cruz knows damn well Obamacare is not going to get repealed.
Yeah.
It's the same hustle that the church has done for a long time, which is you just say what people want to hear to get their money. When I went to NYU, when I was still a regular churchgoer, I went to the NYU Catholic Center, and I was amazed to see gay parishioners welcomed in the church, right? Like, I brought my parents to mass just so they could see it. It was dazzling. And then you go other places in America, and it's all anti-gay. And that's how I kind of realized, you look at America, they talk about abortion. You look in Europe, they talk about the death penalty. The church sends liberal priests to liberal areas and conservative priests to conservative areas because it's a business, and it's all about telling the pews what they want to hear in that region so they'll give you more money so you can buy more paintings instead of feeding India for a year. And it's no different with the GOP. They are just trying to hustle social conservatives for votes, and they're trying to hustle them for donations, and they're never going to do anything.
And you're right. I am really just enjoying sitting back watching this Ted Cruz thing. He didn't have much to say yesterday in response to House Republicans fuming at him for conceding that the Democratic-controlled Senate does not have the votes to repeal Obamacare and leaving the battle and its political perils for the House conservatives to fight. Cruz said yesterday, right now Harry Reid has 54 Democrats, and they are presumably going to stand with him, and a number of Senate Republicans have expressed they may support the Democrats here. I think it's likely it'll take another election for a full repeal. The House Republicans are like, now a warning that we can't do it?
Now a warning?
Yes, here is.
And a full repeal of what? A full repeal of people being covered under their parents' insurance until they're 26? A full repeal of getting rid of pre-existing conditions? Of eliminating waste from health care? Of forcing insurance companies to actually take care of you instead of spending all their money on these stupid, smug advertisements you watch all day?
Yep.
It's like people like what's in Obamacare. They don't like the Obama part because they've been taught to hate this guy. And the worst nightmare the GOP has is people realize that this man that they have been taught to hate is really fighting for their health and their children's health and their parents' health a lot more than Fox News.
Unlike the senator from Alberta.
Right. The senator from Alberta, Ted Cruz, here he is.
This is a moment for Republicans to unite, for every Senate Republican to stand shoulder to shoulder with the gentlemen here and the Republicans in the House who have been courageous doing the right thing.
In my case, standing shoulder to knee.
He said, yesterday you lose 100% of the battles that you start out by surrendering, says the Bluto of the Republican Party.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Germans?
Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's
go! Nobody.
Come on!
Nobody. Nobody.
All is well. Remain calm.
Buddy, he's quite the warrior, isn't he?
I will do everything necessary and anything possible to defund Obamacare.
Oh, you are fearsome. You are fearsome, Braveheart.
Yeah. You know what he won't do? Go on a hunger strike. That's what he won't do.
Yeah.
Look for that to happen. Listen, and this is why the GOP hates Ted Cruz, because they all know this is never going to happen. They know it's never going to get repealed. The Supreme Court has weighed in on it, and it's a conservative design. It's a Republican-designed bill that was made law by a Republican governor in Massachusetts that was upheld by a Republican Supreme Court, and they all know their worst nightmare is when it starts saving Republican lives and Republicans realize they've been lied to. But the thing about Ted Cruz is he knows all of this as well. He's willing to crash the whole boat just to make his star shine brighter. It's all his personal narcissism and his political ambitions, and the other guys know it. And that's why you've got a war of these guys trying to take out Ted Cruz. And on the other side, I've been seeing commercials in some of the rural areas I've been in throughout New England of demand John Boehner be fired. And Republicans are now mounting a growing effort to destroy John Boehner. It is like, it's not just one civil war. This is like Iraq and Syria and a Cuisinart blender. There's 19 civil wars going on at once. And you know what? It is fun to watch. It's scary, but it's tremendously fun because these guys can't gerrymander themselves out of this.
Right.
Yep, exactly. John Fuchel saying you have to go, but you can maybe join us again later in the hour, or?
I'm going to try to. Yeah, we were shooting in a hospital all morning and with a young woman who's a doctor and has $200,000 and a poor girl who did it on her own. She got food stamps. She had no support, came from a broken home. Everything Ted Cruz despises. And this woman got her is graduated med school and now has $200,000 of loans that she's never going to pay back, because she's chosen to work in poor communities and help the needy, unlike the Republicans. And now we're off to a homeless shelter. And it's like the real America's out there. And there's, say what you want about both parties being the same, there's only one party that has members in it who are fighting to give people a hand up and not a hand out.
Yeah.
And God bless you guys for what you
do. You are my personal comedy Jesus. All right, well, hopefully catch up with us if you can by the end of the hour. If not, we'll see you next week. We love you.
I'll see you soon, guys.
All right, bye. There he goes. John Fuchel saying, startlingly handsome.
Isn't
on top
he,
of it all.
And he's the awesome.
Mm-hmm. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
I love it. It's a fabulous program.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Dressed in yellow, she says hello. Come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, what's the move?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. John in South Bend, home of Touchdown Jesus. Hello, John.
Hey, good morning, Steph. How are you?
Good. Good. Calling from Notre Dame land, my daddy's alma mater.
Oh, I got three brothers that went there.
Oh, I got a brother went there to law school and a niece that went there as well. So there.
I got a brother who works there, actually, went to school there, works there, and he's Notre Dame, clear down to his underwear, and he probably has a burial plot there, too.
Yes. We just went from comedy Jesus to touchdown Jesus land. All right, John, go ahead.
Hey, well, listen, I got these weird feelings today. I'm mad and laughing my tail off at the same time. These right-wingers don't seem to understand that there's more women in this country than there are men.
Mm-hmm.
And women want health and education for their children.
Yep.
And, you know, and these guys, they just keep digging a bigger hole all the time, which a lot of times, I mean, I'm happy to see it. But then by the same token, I'm mad and frustrated, too. And I'm going, you know, where is the heart in these people?
That's right. And, right. And I am, by the way, a childless loser, but I want health and I want education so I don't live in a land of dummies that keep voting for people like this.
Well, I got my first grandson coming in November, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm 62 and been working hard and all my life, and I work around a lot of guys who are just working stiffs, and the poor buggers still seem they don't understand, you know, who's putting the screws to them, and because they're just uneducated, uninformed, and all that stuff.
Yep.
And
you know, John, speaking of heart, we played that tape yesterday of what's her name? I just love her. She's, you know, the woman that disarmed this latest crazy a few weeks ago.
Antoinette Tough.
Yeah, she was the school bookkeeper there. But just, I mean, with pure heart and empathy, without a gun. I mean, unfortunately, you know, this last tragedy this week, the good guys with guns, I think, were both shot. I'm not sure if they're both dead, the security guard and the police officer. And this woman, you know, disarmed this kid without having a gun, without anybody being hurt. Just with pure empathy, with pure human, like, heart, as you say, John.
Yes. Well, you know, it's one of these things with these, like, what happened this week, and then I listened to the mother. I'm a big NPR guy, and of course, you in the morning. But,
yeah.
You know, they were talking to the mother of this fellow that did this, and the poor woman was beside herself, and she says, thankfully, somewhere we can't hurt anybody, but... I remind people, I says, you know, that person was a little baby in his mother's arms at one time.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a heartbreaking part of that story that somebody, a neighbor of hers, heard like blues, you know, jazz, you know, like a woman singing jazz music up, you know, like a record, where in his mother's apartment and her just sobbing, you know, they heard that through the walls. I mean, you know,
yeah
to realize that this is the son that you tried to raise. And I know that he was estranged from the family, but, you know. I think you're right, we're losing too many people in our society that, you know, clearly nobody is reaching or getting to or helping, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've come to realize at 62 we all have different personalities. Because I look at some people and I'm just going, you know, what's going on behind those eyeballs? I mean, I just have to accept that maybe that's just the way they are. But there's so many people, I think, that are hurting and suffering. They come out with an article in Indiana, a paper today about a report on women and girls in the state of Indiana. There's some sad facts there. I mean, a lot of these young girls are sad and lonely and feel kind of hopeless, you know.
Well, that's the line that broke my heart in that 911 call is she said, you know, it's okay, honey. We all go through something in life, you know. And she said, I mean, she used her own experience. She said, I almost killed myself when my husband left me last year, you know, and but I mean, I just think that that's such a, and clearly, you know, when you look at what the Republicans are doing, voting against food, you know, cutting $40 billion in food stamps, you know, trying to take people's health care away. You're right. Like, where's the shared humanity anymore?
Well, my daughter, you know, is a pretty good little gal. She's 34 now, but she lives down in Phoenix. She's been big sister to a little gal down there who, for the last 6 years, and this girl is, of course, she's a real cutie pie and 16 years old and lives in a single wide old tin can with her parents and two little brothers, and her mother's deaf and dumb, and her father's just one of these guys that just has, everything's tough for him, you know. And this kid's bright, but she lives in a tough neighborhood, and my daughter and son-in-law are very concerned for her safety, you know. They'd love for her to come live with them, but they can't do anything about it. But they're hoping when she turns 18, she may come live with them, and we all want to help put her to school and help her. But she's just one child in so many different circumstances like this.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, what defines us as a society? What makes America so great? I mean, and these people who, you know, talk about being Christian and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's right, and that's part of this. That, you know, like this. That's the other person that really touched me was this, you know, trauma center doctor that just said there's something evil in our society. There's something going on that we have to stop. We have to, I mean, there are too many people falling through the cracks, you know, whether it's mental health-wise or otherwise, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I just, but that's what defines us as a society. I mean, that's people, I'm going to get this all the time, America's greatest country in the world. And I go, okay, why?
Yeah.
What makes it?
Yeah, all right. 29, good call. 29 minutes after Notre Dame, boy. There we go. 29 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller
thinks that she has the key to popularity, parking in cars with the boys at night. When Jerry brags about taking
Stephanie Miller
out, he learns that she dates all the boys, and he feels less important.
Well, that is an old drop. Okay,
yeah.
34 minutes after the hour.
He heard that she's a slut.
1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number.
What a whore.
Thanks, Jim. Toll free from anywhere. Jordan in California. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Jordan.
Hey, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, I never even listened to your show before. I just kind of turned it on. I'm a pretty far right-wing conservative, but I will say that I do appreciate when you were talking a second ago with the other caller, just really about where is the empathy and where is the heart in this nation and where are we loving each other? I mean,
yes, where is the love?
Example with where, I mean, just the gal you talked about that talked the shooter down, just because she loved on him. And I think we miss that. You know, your last caller said, you know, where are the Christians with their heart? You know, I'm a strong believer, but I believe some of the biggest problems we have in this nation is because we as Christians haven't stepped up to what, you know, the Bible calls us to with feeding the sick and our, you know, feeding the homeless and doing all that kind of stuff, you know?
And that's what the Pope is talking about.
Well, you know, listen, Jordan, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Christian conservatives that, you know, obviously, I don't mean to paint with a broad brush. I think some people misuse religion, but I think some people, you appear to be a good-hearted guy that sort of gets it. And I've often said, like, you know, a lot of, you know, conservatives have to take their religion back, you know, from people that misuse it, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, even, you know, I won't mention where what church I go to, but even in our church, it's hard because we have so many we call Sunday Christians who we show up in a big box and we worship, but we don't go out and sacrifice and serve the community and help those, you know? And that's what's missing, and that's why, like, I have a ton of liberal friends, and they're real close, and we disagree, you know, vehemently on things. However, their heart is the same as mine. Everyone kind of wants to see these people helped, and we just have different plans and guides toward it. I obviously tend to be more, you know, on the private market side.
Jordan, that's what I was saying. It's, you know, you wish you had more people like this woman, you know what I mean, in the country, and we'd have less Aaron Alexis's, I think. You know, by the way, speaking of God, Brad in San Diego writes, Stephanie Mooks, can you please play your gun control, God is watching us? I think it's particularly appropriate this week. And I know you don't like it when I torture you with Bette Midler, but I'm just saying God is watching us.
God is watching us.
This bill is a clear overreach that will predominantly punish and harass our neighbors, our friends, and our families. So to protect the rights of law-abiding citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky and of other states, I will oppose and vote in cloture on S-649.
We're trying to take it to the violent criminal rather than taking it to the innocent Second Amendment law-abiding citizen.
God is watching us.
This is the first step in the erosion of our rights under the Second Amendment.
From a distance.
All right. You know, we were talking about, yeah, this is Antoinette Tuff is her name, that disarmed this kid. And so nobody was even hurt. He, you know, came into a school with a gun. Likewise, we were saying good guys, speaking of good guys with guns, there were at least two of them that were shot and their weapons used to kill more people in this latest Navy Yard shooting this week. We were talking earlier this morning, this Michigan story, this road rage incident. Both drivers had concealed carry weapons, permits. They're both dead.
Yep.
They shot each other over somebody following too close, some road rage ridiculousness. I mean, more guns, guess what, are not the answer, as, a lot of our, respectfully, right-wing nut jobs would say.
Background check means universal registration. Universal registration means universal confiscation, universal extermination.
We don't agree with what you're doing coming to Texas to, quite frankly, piss on us.
I've been listening.
Hitler took the guns.
To what comes out of you.
Mao took the guns.
I'm assuming.
Stalin took the guns.
That you have us to lose.
So we're exploiting red count treason.
The planet Earth ain't making it through to your head.
Get your kids away from the school that is indoctrinating them that socialism is okay.
You've been babbling.
Find a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people.
Globalist collaborator scum you are!
Keep your drooling control.
Like taking everybody's guns.
You are insane, and we'll find you your own path.
our guns. We're going to defeat you.
And in case you had forgot, what a nut job. Don't you think you might just have us through?
We're showing everybody.
What a nut job. You might have slipped away.
They're coming to take me away, huh?
What a nut job.
Stalin took the guns.
I only want to find out for you.
You're the one who won't do anything about the mental heal.
You need it today.
Barack Obama gang actually is attempting to re-implement the tyranny of King George. And if you want another Concord Bridge, I got some buddies.
All right, as Jim often says, who would Jesus shoot?
Exactly.
And whose food stamps would he cut, I wonder? Tracy in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie
the Pharisees,
show. Right.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Tracy in Illinois.
First to go.
Hey, Trace.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Well, I've been listening to you off and on all morning, and I was calling in because the talk about the cutting the food stamp benefits is kind of frustrating to me. I am on food stamps. I have two children. I do work. And the thing that's frustrating is I think when we talk about cutting the benefits, people are thinking that they're going to be dipping into, let's say, my pocket and taking away the money from me and my kids. And I think that a lot of Americans, especially the underinformed Americans, that's the way they look at it. And what they need to understand, and what I think is not said enough, is that when they're talking about cutting the budget, it's kind of like when you have $100 in your account and you expect next month to get another $100. Well, they're cutting the budget. They're saying that, no, instead of adding to it $100 like we had planned on, we're going to take away $50. So you're only going to get $150 to use next month as opposed to $200. So when they talk about cutting all these, you know, big numbers that, you know, boggle people's minds because we don't deal with those numbers on a daily basis, they're not saying they're taking that out of the fund that's already there. They're just saying that the presumed amount that they were going to add on is not what they were going to be adding into it.
Right.
And my other point is, I do get a high benefit amount for three people in Illinois. I don't know if it goes by county or by state, but I do get, you know, close to $500, a little over $500 a month for to feed three people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we eat pretty well, and at the end of the month, if I budget right and I go through and, you know, like normal Americans and find the things that are on sale, you know, I have money left over at the end of the month, and that's where my kids get, you know, little special treats in their school lunches. But I think that we can find a way to maybe say, if your top benefit amount is, let's say, $550, well, why don't we look at cutting that top benefit amount by $20, $30? Because if you add up the amount of people that are at the top that get the most amount of benefits and say, why don't we just reduce that by $10, $15 a person, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially across the board as opposed to the people that have a minimal amount that they
Trace,
receive.
Trace, I hear you. And that's what happens when they, you know, when they slash with a you know, that's machete
like
as they normally do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, anyway. My main question is, why is she only listening off and on? Why will she not commit to me? Why is she being so distant?
She has two kids. She works.
Whatever. Off and on. Kent and Charlotte, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Kent. Okay, Kent.
He's listening to the radio.
Okay, Kent needs to turn the radio off. Okay. By the way, could you take your organ out, back out for me? I think, you know, we should all do this weekend. Try to be a little more popey, in honor of Pope Frank. It really is sort of startling. I was reading more of the actual interview stuff he said, not just about, obviously about gay people. He said, as we mentioned earlier, a person once asked me in a provocative manner if I approved of homosexuality. I think he meant argumentative. He didn't mean like,
what do you think about the girl on girl? Hey, Poppy.
Yeah. I replied with another question. He said, tell me, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person with love or reject and condemn this person? We must always consider the person. And then he also spoke about abortion, divorce, and the role of confession, which, giving an example that is sure to make the Catholic Church's ultra-conservative shudder. He said, the confessional is not a torture chamber, but a place in which the Lord's mercy motivates us to do better. I also consider the situation of a woman with a failed marriage in her past who also had an abortion. Then this woman remarries, and she's now happy and has five children. That abortion in her past weighs heavily on her conscience, and she sincerely regrets it. She would like to move forward in her Christian life. What is the confessor to do? The rhetorical question the Pope poses may hint that confession could be seen as absolution in either case, meaning that a divorced woman or one who had an abortion could be forgiven and allowed to take communion or even remarry in the church. But, you know, pretty startling stuff for the Pope. But, mercy, an interesting word that, you know, I think a lot of callers have been alluding to this morning. Let's go to Tim in Indiana. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Tim.
Yeah, hey, Stephanie.
Hey.
I've been wanting to call in many times, but... I want you to be gentle with me here.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I'm really on your side. I voted for Obama. Are you? Oh, was that wonderful music? Yeah. I'm for health care. I'm for taxing the rich more, all these things. But I'm here in Southern Indiana where I literally started shooting a gun when I was four. Everybody carries guns here. It's mm-hmm. just not it's a divisional issue that is not, It's not a black or white issue. It's a not Democrat or Republican issue down here.
I'm on my buddy Ed Schultz's show today. He's obviously a big sportsman and, mm-hmm. gun owner. So, I get it. I get it that it is also different, in different cultures, rural and urban cultures.
Okay, yeah, it's just when I hear, get very strong on those things, it makes me want to turn the dial sometimes, and I don't want to be there because I like most of the things we're talking about.
Don't do that. You will not do that.
Okay, Steph, I won't.
I'm not trying to, I think I'm talking about reasonable gun safety measures that 90% of the American people are for, Tim. I'm not, I kid when I say I'm a gun grabber.
Right, I think we're all shocked to find out that when that guy was on the Navy base, I assumed these naval people were armed. I thought there would be guns. I figured this guy would be shut down.
There were security personnel with guns around him.
And they were shot, and their weapons used against other people.
Right. Right, and that does happen. I mean, that happens in all sorts of hold-up situations, whatever. But, if these personnel were armed as military people, which I thought they would be.
Every single person in there was a civilian, look at the
story I just did today about these two, guys in Michigan with concealed carry permits, a road rage incident. They're both dead. They both shot each other.
Right. Yeah,
how many domestic disputes, for instance, do you think would end differently if there were not a gun involved?
I mean, don't you think those two guys would have ran each other off the road and, and killed each other with the cars? They seem like two idiots, I don't think it has to
do with
the
gun. Yes, they could have killed each other with cars, but they did not. They killed each other with guns.
I think these people are going to kill each other no matter what. Yeah.
But see, that's why we have a gun, car safety regulations and things like that, because people do kill each other with their cars sometimes. But see, and conversely, there is no regulation at all. You see, in guns is what my point was there. Don't change the dial.
I mean, the auto industry, complained about seat belts and safety glass and airbags. Turns out, cars are better and safer now because of all those.
And more importantly,
fewer people get killed.
Kim Jong-un loves dolphins. And we have...
Really?
Yes, we have audio on that as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ongoing train wreck aside, I love this.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 52 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, well, Friday party stack. Texas Appeals Court overturns Tom DeLay money laundering conviction.
Oh,
Drunky McPuke Shoes will be hitting the bars this weekend, won't you, Drunky?
Conservatives saw the savagery of 9/11. In the effects in the attacks and prepared for war. Liberals saw the savagery of 9/11 attacks and wanted to prepare indictments and offer therapeutic understanding. for our attackers. That's not slander. That's the truth.
Yep, he'll be dancing on the bar to tequila in his little tiny white shoes.
I'm trying to use the phone.
Oh, Texas. Texas, who's given us Ted Cruz as well. Oh, it's all.
Well, yeah, Canada. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, have you seen this? Somebody tweeted, senior GOP leadership aide, Cruz is the leader of a secret cabal of leftists whose aim is to destroy the conservative movement from within.
Damn you. You figured it out.
Oh, damn it. He's a secret liberal cult leader.
Ah, yes.
Bet you didn't see that coming. Huh? Oh, God, the crazy's just getting crazier. Oh, did you see the creepy Uncle Sam ad that about Obamacare?
Yes.
The creepy new ad suggests if you sign up for Obamacare, you'll be raped by a scary Uncle Sam clown. He has a speculum over the female patient,
yes.
And then the man, he's like, turn over, and he puts on a glove like he's going to shove his hand.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's him. Yeah, there he is. He's a big, giant Uncle Sam clown with a speculum.
Right.
Okay.
And that's put out by the Republican Party, who would like to be all up in your lady parts, regarding abortion.
Right.
That's a little hypocritical on the part of Republicans.
Wow. Do we, I hate to do an ad for Glenn Beck, do we have his ad for his little, mm-hmm. Yeah, because guess what happened yesterday? Here is a think tank, Jim. Mark Levin joined Glenn Beck on his radio show.
Mark Levin.
Yesterday
sarcastic
morning.
Sarcastic and ultra-right wing.
And both men ended up going after Republicans for abandoning conservative principles. Beck said he's tired of the lesser of two evils argument, while Levin said this is exactly why they need a constitutional convention. And if the states vote and want to surrender to tyranny, it's tyranny they get. Wow. Doubling down on the crazy. The Republican Party, not far right enough.
No more black people in the White House.
I wish we played in the montage earlier. You need to move somewhere where you have only like-minded people near you.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Glenn Beck place.
Glenn Beckistan.
Right.
Are you tired of your government taking away liberties and freedoms you can't quite name? Are your vague platitudes and third-hand anecdotal facts falling on deaf ears? Well, come secede, or SECD with us, in the Teabagger Utopia. Glenn, Becky, Stan.
I will personally come to your house and help you pack.
Your hard-earned money is yours to keep. There are no taxes in Glenn, Becky, Stan. Of course, there are no roads, bridges, police, fire protection, no teachers, hospitals, libraries, garbage pickup, or sewage treatment in Glenn, Becky, Stan. But hey, who cares about that big government nonsense? You'll feel like our founding fathers as you struggle against the elements, fending off wild animals and your fellow teabaggers when provisions run low and their survivalist training kicks in.
Get off my land!
Who needs government? It's overrated. Join us in Glenn, Becky, Stan. We have freedoms with none of the responsibilities. You want to shoot your gun in any direction? Go ahead. Want to lock your wife and children in the basement? Nobody's asking questions. Remember, freedom isn't free, but with a small down payment, it can be yours for a song.
Above the fruited plain.
Glenn, Becky, Stan. Our future is in the past.
Yep. All right,
well,
have fun, everybody.
Glenn Beck wants to be with like-minded people. You can always go to the loony bin.
There you go.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. The funny farm where life is beautiful all the time.
All right. More importantly, Kim Jong-un loves dolphins. Dear Leader is really into dolphins.
They're very tasty.
North Korea's official news service reports that Supreme Commander personally inspected the Munsu swimming complex currently under construction in Pyongyang. I believe we have some of his thoughts.
They call him Flipper, Flipper, faster than a typo dong. No one will see, he's smarter than he. And we know Flipper lives in a Pyongyang dolphinarium, flying there under the Munsu swimming complex, currently under construction in Pyongyang. Bob, Sandy, arrest the Flipper immediately for anti-revolutionary tendency. He was watching Western television show from the 1960s. Oh, wait, so have I. I hereby arrest myself. I'm a bastard person and I hate my ass face. Damn you, Dennis Rodman. You are a bad influence. I'm a bad man. I'm a very bad man. I'm going to wish myself into the kimchi field. I hate TV night. Kim out!
Oh, Lord.
Oh, I think it's best we end on that. Oh, however.
Twilight Zone mashup there.
However, on the week when they just cut $40 billion in food stamps, we do have to give Republican Douche Nozzle of the Week award to, what's this guy's name? Millionaire Georgia Republican says his $172,000 salary isn't enough for 126 days of work.
Yeah.
Phil Gingrey, that guy. He said, while lobbyists can make $500,000 a year, I'm stuck here making $172,000 a year.
Could you just not breathe?
No, just don't. All right, have a great week, and we'll see you Monday on the Stephanie Miller Show.